Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Cyient Limited's conference call for acquisition of Tao Digital. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Krishna Bodanapu. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Michelle. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Cyient Limited's investor call to discuss the acquisition of Tao Digital. I'm Krishna Bodanapu, Executive Vice Chairman and Managing Director, and present with me on this call are Sukamal Banerjee, Executive Director and CEO, Srinivas Kulkarni, CFO, and Harjott Atrii, Chief Business Officer. I would like to mention that some of the statements made in today's discussions may be forward-looking in nature and may involve risks and uncertainties. This call will be accompanied by a short presentation, the details of which have been already shared with you. Firstly, I would like to thank you for joining us at a short notice. The acquisition of Tao Digital marks a pivotal moment in how our business is evolving. As you know, over the last 35 years, we have evolved with the markets, and we have evolved quite significantly with the markets. We started off as a digitization company, basically creating digital drawings from paper drawings. Over a period of time, we are very proud to say we've evolved and we've taken worldwide leadership in being a pure-play engineering services company, a leadership position that we continue to hold and that makes us quite unique in the market. But as you know, over the last couple of years, the engineering space and what our engineering customers require has been evolving. I'll reflect back and give you a quick example. If for those of us who are fortunate to have driven cars in the 90s, or my daughter describes as being old, we remember that we had very few choices in terms of how a car worked. You were lucky to have shock absorbers, much less being able to adjust the suspension system. Whatever was controlled through some dials and knobs, which were mostly mechanical. But anyway, fast forward to the vehicles of today. In most vehicles, you're able to control how the suspension feels. You're able to set an off-road setting. You're able to set a fuel efficiency setting and many, many other modes. How does this happen? Though the ultimate system is a very mechanical or an electromechanical system driven by electronics and electricals, how we control the system is a software imperative or a software solution. We use the in-car device where we set, it's all touchscreen now for most part, but we use that to set these settings of a suspension system. So what is happening, if I may quickly summarize, is what is happening is in engineering, we're seeing a lot more interplay of both software platforms and digital. And of course, as an extension of digital data and as an extension of all of that, the prevalence of AI and some of the AI applications that are coming in. So my point is the need for our customers has evolved from being a pure play engineering solution, which is based on mechanical engineering, electronics, etc., to being a convergence between software, data, technology, and engineering. And I think this gives us the opportunity to really strengthen our offerings in that interplay. I'm also very proud to say that we've already put in a lot of effort in this area. Already today, 8% almost of our revenue comes from the technology aspect, which again, I will describe as software, digital, data, AI, the technology aspect rather than the pure engineering aspect. And going forward, we believe that our customer, not just we believe, we are seeing and our customers are asking us to do more from this interplay and create capabilities around the technology and software that help them do engineering better and control their products better or manage their products better or manage their aftermarkets better. Obviously, Sukamal and Harjott will take you through what this means and how the market is evolving. But I just wanted to introduce the fact that this is a great opportunity for us to really lead this evolution in the market like we have done in the past transitions. And as we transition from being a pure-play engineering provider to being a leader in this technology convergence. Again, I'm very proud to say that we've built some great capabilities, and Tao Digital will only enhance these capabilities. With that, I'll hand it over to Sukumar to talk about the deal and some of the details of the deal. Sukumar, over to you.
Thank you, Krishna. Good morning to all participants on this call, and thank you again for joining at short notice. We will cover three quick aspects, and I will touch upon the rationale behind this deal and how it helps us in the journey. So as Krishna mentioned, what we are trying to achieve in this is, first and foremost, it helps us position ourselves for a larger market and for larger deals. It aligns Cyient's pivot towards what we have been calling lifecycle engineering. It simply means that we are not done in our association with our customers in just building the product and engineering the product, but take the product and, depending on the industry, these products last anywhere between 8 to 10 years in terms of its lifespan to 40, 50, and in some cases of infrastructure like plants, even 70, 80 years. And as time passes, what becomes more and more important is the data around engineering, the data of the product, the data of the processes, and the software platform, which harnesses all of this. Obviously, with the digitalization journey, this has become far more important, especially over the last 10 years. And with the advent of AI, the ROI on harnessing this data is far more significant than it ever was. What it does for us also, it drives a shift from a narrow view of a $100 billion TAM, that is ER&D outsourcing, to an estimated $2 trillion market in just the industries we play in, without expanding into any additional industries. It aligns also very well with what our customers have been asking for, and also, more importantly, what is their growth journey. In many industries like aerospace, as you are well aware, there are no significant new designs which are happening. But what is happening in aerospace, in energy, in medtech, is a phenomenal growth in volumes in terms of number of assets and number of products that need to be simply delivered by them. What also needs to be done along with that is a significant amount of services, because that is where our customers make money. So essentially, that's where the next 3 to 5 year growth of our customers are, which again feeds back extremely well into this whole concept of why lifecycle engineering is so important and how it drives growth for us. We are already playing in this space in certain sectors like aerospace and in limited ways in others. We definitely with this want to harness and make sure that we can take it across all of our verticals and not just stay limited in one or two areas only. Of course, it delivers the second point, annuity deals. It creates more of a longer-term predictable growth, moves away from project-based work to more multi-year, multi-tower deals. It also helps us get ready for what's coming up and actively under consideration and discussions with several customers, which are outcome-based commercial models. It definitely positions ourselves for making sure that we can address customer needs beyond traditional engineering areas that Krishna called out. And I will let Harjot also talk more about that aspect as he talks about how the two organizations fit together. The third point quickly, obviously, just in terms of numbers, in terms of the portfolio mix that we have, and something that I have discussed with several of you before, as Krishna mentioned, from around high single digit areas, we are adding more than 10 BPS in terms of the mix of service line, which is in the technology area for us. So from high single digits, we are going to high teens in terms of the mix of business that is in a higher growth area. Fourth, it obviously brings in critical or fills critical gaps for us in a AI-led market shift. And again, I'll let Harjot go into more details, but this is directly relevant, and we are seeing already a good amount of activity in the market where the advent of AI and the potential what AI can do to many of our existing business as well as new business areas where customers' backlogs are significant, need to be harnessed through more data engineering work and, more importantly, platform software engineering work. And that's what, again, Tao brings to the table. Just a data point, as you see over here, this is not just we talking about it. Our customers have been giving us the same feedback in our CSAT surveys for the last 2 years. In fact, this year, 79 out of 116, which is approximately 70% of our executives polled in our CSAT, gave that same feedback. Finally, as we talked about and Krishna mentioned, it creates the capability scale. While we have been building it up on an organic level, this helps us create a more robust critical mass in areas like data engineering and software engineering, which are critical ingredients to drive this AI-driven shift. With that, let me invite Harjot Atri, who is our Chief Business Officer for Strategic Initiatives. And over to you, Harjot, to talk about Tao and how it fits into our journey.
Sure. Thanks, Sukumar. Good morning. So let me just, while you look at the fact sheet, let me quickly, you know, explain the three key capabilities which Tao Digital brings and how that impacts and brings about a step function change into our growth strategy as Sound, Cyient and Tao joint capabilities. Three key strengths which Tao brings on the table is one, their understanding and their successful track record in the managing the entire life cycle of the data, and hence getting the data ready for AI opportunities. So starting from data collection, data curation, annotation, but using, you know, tools, automated tools to do that cheaper, faster, better, is one pillar of their data strategy and data capabilities. But they go into data engineering, identifying, you know, what in terms of the AI models, what is required in terms of the storage architecture, the data performance, the data security, data gravity, data velocity, all those aspects in terms which go towards building the enterprise grade data lakehouse, data warehouses, is where they're already delivering work right now. And then eventually in terms of using that data to build the ontologies and knowledge graphs to train the agents, and then, you know, deliver the outcome-based services to our customers in industrial engineering. So the entire life cycle of the data, whether it's dark data, unstructured data, structured data, how do you collect it, cure it, to store it, make it available for the vector databases, build the industrial-grade, enterprise-grade data lakehouse, data warehouses, and then run the analytics and engineering on top of it. So that's one stream, and that's one, you know, capability strength they bring on the table. The second aspect, the second strength is, you know, their ability to understand the science and the depth of new age software engineering and the platform engineering. So we all know that, you know, the AI will drive more software and more code to be generated. Our customers are looking at, in terms of their build versus buy decision, the skew and the is to more towards building to retire the tech debt and then rewire the organization and the enterprise workflows. So Cyient understands how to build next-gen platforms, how to engineer the next-gen platforms, you know, which are composable, scalable, reusable, and are secure for AI products. And those products will be software products, you know, software products embedded into the industrial products. So they understand that piece very well. And the third part is, as we look at the AI opportunity, the talent pyramid is also changing and it's evolving. So no longer, you know, just the traditional developer stack or designers which were working in the pods are required for the AI projects. So they have the scale and they have the talent, which allows us to build the new pod structures, new pyramids, which will bring in the concept of forward deployed engineering, which will bring in the concept of AI leads driving, you know, the customer ROI in business cases, and we bring in the bridge, how do we bridge the the human experience and the AI models to drive a business outcome for the customers. So three key pillars, you know, are the life cycle of the data, the life cycle of the platform and the software product engineering, and the life cycle of the talent, and how we pivot from, you know, what was traditional talent management for software to AI age new software engineering talent. So with this, you know, when we look at the market opportunity, if I just double click on terms of what Krishna shared in his opening, is that across the board, what we are seeing, especially in the industrial enterprise, engineering customers, is that they're all being rewired. The competitive advantage is shifting from just pure play physical assets to how do you extract intelligence from the life cycle of the product. So the change we are seeing across the board, and that's getting reflected, you know, in our customer conversations. That's getting reflected in the demand signals we have from the market in terms of the RFPs, and some of the deals we are solutioning and we're already delivering as well. The three, four key changes that we see, which is happening in specific to industrial engineering customers is, you know, the concept of products is changing. So, it's not just pure play mechanical and hardware centric products, which are standalone with long development cycles. The shift is more towards, software defined products, which are more connected and intelligent systems. And there is a continuous telemetry from the product to understand the consumers and experience. The second part that's changing as the customers is that the consumption and how the consumers pay to our customers is changing as well. So the customers are looking at no longer the asset ownership and just routine periodic maintenance. You know, there is a continuous connected ecosystem. There's more predictive and proactive experience which our customers want to deliver, and they pay into as a service model. So the monetization is changing, the consumption is changing, and the products are changing as well in our customers' business model across industrial engineering, whether it's aviation, aerospace, whether it's energy, whether it's med devices, or it's, you know, manufacturing, farm equipment and all. So what this really means is that the data and the software becomes the key across the board, whether it's engineering lifecycle or whether it's service asset service lifecycle for MRO and aftermarkets, where we play a dominant role, or it's the quality and regulatory compliance lifecycle. So it, just to give you a brief mapping in terms of, you know, where we create synergies and as we combine the forces with science and how digital is, we understand, because of our legacy in engineering, we understand not just the data, but the domain and the context behind the data. So we bring something which is very critical for all AI journeys and the AI roadmaps is, you know, how well we can bring the context and domain in the data, how well we can write the ontologies and knowledge graphs to train the agents and build the new AI enterprise agentic operating model for our customers. And the other three blocks are more about data and software engineering, which we talked about, the agentic layer and the AI applications. So we believe that, you know, this acquisition strengthens science across both the upstream engineering foundations, where we understand the business case, the ROI, the intent engineering, as well as the downstream AI application delivery, where we create outcomes for our customers in the engineering lifecycle, whether it's a product engineering, or whether it's quality engineering, regulatory compliance, and the asset and service lifecycle engineering. I will now hand over to Shirin.
Thank you, Harjot, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining the call early in the morning. I'll quickly touch upon the deal construct. I think this has already been published, but I'll give you some additional color in terms of how the deal was negotiated. As you know, at 100% of the earnout payouts, which are linked to the performance, the deal is valued at $218 million. Now, the upfront is 60% of this value, about $130 million. Which works out to 7.9 times the calendar year 2025 EBITDA of the target. Now, this is to be paid at closing with 100% transfer of shares. So we are acquiring the entire company. There are two tranches of earnouts across 2 years post-closing. Now, the EBITDA growth is a performance criteria for these earnouts. This is an all-cash deal that is EPS accretive for us. It's also ROCE positive. The company will be a wholly owned subsidiary of Scientific. I want to assure you all that the EPS accretion is after taking into account all the integration costs and the one-time transaction costs. Now, so therefore, after the integration is concluded in about 1.5 years, this becomes substantially accretive. Now, the acquisition will be primarily funded through debt. We'll use a combination of debt and equity, but primarily it will be funded by debt. And a large part of the debt will be serviced by the assets free cash flow itself. The asset is a very healthy cash generating asset, and they have very good conversion despite their growth. The other aspect of the earnout performance is also the value lock on the synergy. There is earnout accelerator that sort of kicks in once the synergy EBITDA and management incentives and retention schemes are there in place for as additional support to accelerate the entity. So that's a brief on the deal construct. I'll now hand the call back to Michelle for moderating the Q&A. And if you have any additional questions on the transaction structure itself, I'll be happy to take that during the Q&A. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask questions may please press star and one on the touchtone phone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use only handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. You may please press star and one to ask questions. The first question is from the line of Moesh Chandani from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good morning, and thank you for taking my question. My first question was, you know, on the broader philosophy for Cyient because of this deal. So a lot of the capabilities that, you know, you seem to have acquired with Tao Digital seem to be what, you know, the traditional IT services companies have done. So is this, you know, focus area for you going forward that you will, you know, use your traditional R&D expertise and then also, but right now for the next 3 to 5 years, the focus is on maybe developing more traditional IT service capabilities. And then also in a related note, in some of the large deals that you expect to win, the annuity deals, etc., that you expect to win with Cyient plus Tao Digital, who do you think will be your primary competitor for this? So that's my first question.
Yeah, Moesh, hi, this is Sukumar here. I'll answer the question, and if there's any follow-up, I'll request Harjot also to chime in. So two things. One is, while technology level-wise, it may sound like traditional IT skills, I will repeat what Krishna started with, that the boundary between IT and engineering, as in what product needs to succeed in its life cycle, from a technology need perspective, are blurring. It has been blurring for quite some time. I think AI and advent of AI is accelerating that boundary to be blurred. So as our customers build out more and more about how they service their products from a services perspective, and by services as in how they provide support services, maintenance services, how they do spare parts over and above just selling the equipment one time. So essentially, if I may use the common term, use the Gillette model, they make much more money by not by selling the original equipment, by servicing the equipment and the parts and the supply chain and the obsolescence over a period of time. So that is what is creating a significant shift towards, from a business perspective, need for platforms which are integrated with the product, like Harjot explained, the telemetry of the product actually creates a rich source of data. So to say that this is IT and this is engineering, I think is a little too looking a little bit from a historical perspective. So while the terminologies used in terms of technology skills may be similar, but the need and the domain experience that is critical to make that success, successful is entirely an engineering problem statement we are solving. We are not becoming a back-end IT, back-office IT company trying to create HR applications or anything like that. We are still sticking to the product lifecycle. Does that answer your question?
Sure. Yeah, that was fairly clear. Thanks so much, Sukamal, for that. And then just secondly, you know, if I'm looking at, you know, the numbers that you have provided, it seems that you're expecting a fairly sharp improvement in EBITDA from CY25 to CY27. So first, can I get a sense in terms of how you're expecting revenue growth and EBITDA margins to shape up over the past, over the next couple of years? And then also, I mean, the company seems to have a strong history of acquisitions, Tao Digital. So what has organic growth been like for the company? I know it's just a four-year startup, so, you know, the time period is fairly limited. But any sense of organic versus inorganic growth for the past as well as for the future may be fairly helpful.
Sure. Shaini, would you like to take that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think from a growth perspective, what we have considered is, you know, fairly conservative compared to the history and past. I think the target has been growing at more than 100%, as you can see from the numbers in the last 3 years. And even the organic growth is a very big growth, right? The past 3 years growth is very high for organic as well. What we have considered going forward is actually conservative in that sense compared to their historical perspective. And even on EBITDA, I think we have made an assumption on the historical EBITDA, taking into account the some of the integration costs that might come up during the course of the next few years, right? So we have not assumed any growth in the EBITDA percentage per se. I think obviously there will be volume growth and therefore EBITDA will also come in at a substantial growth. But these are the numbers I can provide. If you have any questions, further questions on this, I can clarify.
Sure. Any numbers in terms of what the organic growth has been for the past few years for the company?
Harjit, do you have that number with you?
So, Sukumar here, I can answer. It has been over 100% CAGR year over year. Obviously, they started, as you said, 4 years startup.
Yeah.
It started from a small base. So on that smaller base, it has been 100% CAGR for the organic growth.
Understood. Okay.
And organic by definition is obviously inorganic after 12 years, after 12 months becoming organic.
Yeah. Okay, understood. Thank you for that. And just the last question on my side, management continuity for this company post the acquisition, do you expect the CEO for Tao Digital and the broader management team to continue to be a part of Cyient even after the acquisition has been completed?
Sure, I'll take that. The answer is yes. So as you see in the deal structure itself, there's a two-year earn-out and it is substantially incentivizing the management team for that two-year earn-out. So that is a clear lock-in which is there. Having said that, in terms of intent and the journey they are on and what they see ahead with us, there has been extensive discussion and the intent is for the key management personnel to continue for sure, even beyond the 2 years. Our intent is to make them, is to have them continue to be part of the journey because we see substantial growth in this area and given this not being a bolt-on acquisition for us, this being almost a platform-level acquisition for us, we would like to see the management team continue beyond 2 years, and that is the plan.
Okay, understood. Thank you for taking the questions. That was
all. Sure.
Am I audible, sir?
Audible now.
Yes,
you're audible now.
Okay, sir. We'll take the next question from the line of Sandeep Shah from Equirus Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks and congrats on this target. Just the first question I think if I look at the revenue size and the employees, the average revenue per employee comes out to be $33,000-$34,000, which is much lower than what we generally look at in the engineering R&D companies. So, how do you explain this? And is it largely offshore? And what is the current EBITDA margin of this company? Because if I look at the upfront payment and EV by EBITDA, which we are assigning, we are targeting a 16%-17% EBITDA margin in CY 2027. So how does it look like in CY 2025?
Vinny, would you like to go ahead?
Yeah, sorry, I was speaking on mute.
Yep. Sandeep, there is a component of the work which is offshore as well. You know, about 30% of the workforce is in, you know, so the data.
Vinny, you are not audible. Sorry for that.
Sir, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Mr. Shah, please mute your line. There is a follow-up from your line. Mr. Sandeep Shah, please mute your line. Sir, please continue.
Sandeep, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you. Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So no, I was saying the billing rate appears low because there's a heavy offshore component, and within offshore, about 40% of the workforce is also data digitization work, which is critical for the overall deliverable. But that business is about 20% of the overall business, right? And therefore, the billing rate appears a little bit low when you look at it on a consolidated basis. But the other part of the business, the billing rates are very competitive. In fact, they are quite high, and therefore, you know, it sort of reflects in their margin as well, right? So that was the question on you had on the overall revenue per employee. What was the other question, Sandeep? I missed it.
Yeah. I think the EV by EBITDA multiple of 9.5x has been assigned for a upfront payment of $160 million. So in that scenario, the target EBITDA margin would be 16.8%-17% by CY 2027, which for a highly offshore company looks lower. So what is the current EBITDA margin and where we are looking in the coming years?
Yeah, so the upfront payment, Sandeep, is clarify that. Then, the EBITDA margins are closer to actually 20% for the target. We have taken some haircut from the next 2 years from a modeling perspective because of some litigation and other costs that might come in, right? Otherwise, the target is growing at 20, top line, as well as they hold on to their EBITDA. So the, if you see the steady disclosure we had given at historical for the last 3 years, right, both on the-
Sir, I'm sorry, sir, to interrupt you. Can you repeat your last line? Because your audio was not clear, sir, for some reason.
Okay. No, I was telling that, you know, if you look at our steady disclosure, we have given historical revenue for the company. You apply a 20% growth on those numbers and take a 20% EBITDA, we get the sort of target, you know, the overall multiple that we are paying for that company.
Okay. And Srini, just a clarification. In the previous reply to my question on billing rate, you said 20% of the business is a low billing rate business. What is that? What is the nature of the same?
That is a data digitization business.
Okay. Okay. So where you convert the physical image into digital image?
I think, Harjott, if you may want to explain what it is and how it is critical for what we are trying to do.
Yeah. So the data digitization business is primarily physical image to digital image is just one part of it. It's also about, you know, collecting the data, both the structured data, the unstructured data. You know, and then once the data inflow, data pipeline is there, how do you define the data hierarchy in the model, cleaning the data as per the business rules, annotating the data, and then, you know, getting the data ready for storage into vector databases. This entire, you know, pipeline through which the data flows from pure plate collection, curation, compilation, and annotation, whether it's video, whether it's unstructured social media data, whether it's unstructured, you know, engineering drawings, emails, you know, legacy data sources, everything has to be made ready before any SLMs or LLMs can work and consume that data to drive any outcomes for the customer. Getting the data ready for AI and collecting as much as data as we can, is the low-hanging opportunity in the market, which has a 2-3-year runway for us. And that's where they are very important, because not only they manage it, the digitization of it, but they're also bringing in tools to automate it and scale it up as the data volumes grow. So multiple sources of data, you know, volume scaling up, you know, and then getting the data into the target platforms from where it gets picked up by the agents for the training and inferencing, is where the maximum value is where the biggest opportunity is for the next 2-3 years.
If I may just add to what Harjott said, having seen this business for the last almost 30 years, from a data conversion perspective, I think it's very important to also realize that it's not a simple sort of physical to digital, which is what we'd originally do. I'll say that the amount of annotations, the amount of associated information that goes with a piece of data, a point of interest or what have you, has gone up at least 25-30 times in the last even 10 years. So it's just not a simple conversion. The amount of data that's associated with the conversion and how the conversion happens, the automation, et cetera, I think is what TAO does very well. And it will also help us with our existing business because they've developed tools, et cetera, which actually can add a lot of value. So I think it's not just a simple conversion. My point is, it's not just a simple conversion, but the associated information that goes with that conversion and how that happens has changed quite dramatically, and therefore it's also important not to lose sight of that piece of the business.
And
Thanks.
Sukumar here, if I may just add, to be clear, what the value that we are while this is an explanation of your question, the value we are focused on is the other 80% of the business, and that's the driver for this acquisition.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. Just a follow-up on that 80% of the business, is it predominantly focused on maintenance of the industrial products as a after-sale service, or is it also in terms of the production phase? So where do we play the role through this target company? Is it more pre-sales in the production phase or after-sale services in terms of a AI agent-led maintenance model?
So there are two parts to this answer. One is what is TAO bringing to the table, which is of value to Cyient? And the second is, what do they do? So Harjott, if you want to explain
Yeah.
on both sides and answer this question.
Sure, Sukumar. So, you know, the 80% of the business, which Sukumar referred to, is primarily complex platform engineering. You know, how do you build platforms for next gen on which the software products could be developed? So, that part of is one big part in terms of, you know, next gen open interoperable platforms, making sure they're modular, they're composable. So the platform engineering as a science and understanding that how do you build the platform business, on which the software products get developed, is one part of their large part of the business. And the second is a big component of the 80% of the business is high-end data engineering. Data digitization is just a wedge play, an entry point where we see a short-term opportunity in terms of volume, scale, and complexity. But what comes back, what comes as downstream business from that point is, how do you decide data velocity, data gravity? How will that data be consumed by the industrial workloads? Where will that data be stored? As we look at our customers' roadmap strategy in aerospace, energy, that data, that ton volumes of data, petabytes of data, will not go to public clouds because that's the secret sauce in terms of hundreds of years of product engineering data, which will be made available in the vector databases. So they will build their own private AI infrastructure. So they will need new architecture. So that's what Tao understands very well. Tao understands the technical design and the architecture part of how to build next-gen enterprise-grade data lakehouse, data warehouses, how to understand the customer's business and identify what kind of performance is required, which workloads will consume the data, and as they consume the data, what inferencing decision they will take. So this is all part of the agentic AI operating system that will, that is coming into a customer's organization. So that is, high value, complex, design engineering of data along with software and platform. Those are the three pillars which form the remaining 80% of the business. Let me take a pause before I go into how do we monetize this, from our go-to-market strategy. I hope I answered the 80% question clearly.
The last bookkeeping, I think Krishna, you in the Q4 call has highlighted the non-recurring charge on the M&A related transaction may have some future acquisition. So this is the one you were talking about, or there are more in the pipeline?
Sandeep, the Q4 one was not related to this. There are some in the pipeline, but for now, I think we will have a non-recurring charge this quarter as well for coming in from this transaction, but not obviously not to the extent of what we mentioned last quarter.
Okay. So that means some others are also in evaluation stage.
Yes, but they are in the early stages, right?
Okay. Thanks and all the best.
Maybe if I just clarify, the one that I talked about in Q4, we've put a pause on it. It was a different transaction, but there's others, but not related to what we talked about in Q4.
Thank you, sir, for answering those questions. The participant has left the queue. We'll move on to the next question from the line of Bhavik Mehta from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. So a couple of questions. So firstly, traditionally we have seen the buying centers for engineering services and IT services being different. Now, the kind of services Tao Digital provides, and if you're taking those services to your existing engineering clients, are we going to still deal with the R&D organization as a buying center, or do we need to start dealing with the CIO or the IT services organization from a client perspective?
Yeah, so Bhavik, Sukumal here. Your point is absolutely correct. Traditionally they have been different. Obviously there has been some evolution with roles like Chief Digital Officer and in many enterprises over the last, I would say 7-8 years. There have been other areas also which have evolved, roles which have evolved like Chief Data Officer in many organizations. And firstly, to give a perspective on the lay of the land, there's obviously a variation depending on which enterprise you're talking about how these things are divided. So there is a lot of decisions which is taken in the R&D organization. There are decisions which are taken in the Chief Data Officer organization, in the Chief Digital Officer organization, and in the CIO. And depending on the organization, the boundaries are different. Second is, a lot of what Cyient does is not just R&D. We work with the chief supply chain officers. We work with the chief services officer or the aftermarket business leaders. We do a lot of work with the business units themselves, which may be regional business units, or they may be market-specific business units, which may be focused on specific market verticals, where they put together multiple different products for a specific market. Like, for example, what's happening with the AI data center, where suddenly energy OEMs have to bring together a lot of capabilities from different business units for one specific customer in a very rapid space. So there are all kinds of these scenarios that Cyient has direct access to, where services platforms, like I was talking about earlier, becomes very, very important. So the answer is there are multiple buying centers. There are increasingly these new buying centers which are emerging. But yes, still the CIO will remain important. And in some cases, we do have to work with the CIO. And we have successfully done that in some of our key accounts already in terms of winning businesses in the CIO organization. Or in with the blessing of the CIO organization, a combination of them. And so it is a little bit of all of these aspects that we have to navigate.
Okay, got it. The second question is, you know, when you say this deal is going to be EPS accretive, let's say in 1.5 years, is this after the amortization cost and the interest cost will bear because of the debt? And just to clarify that.
Yes, Bhavik. It is after the amortization cost, after the integration cost, after the interest cost for the debt as well. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Dipesh Mehta from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity. A couple of questions. First, just want to get sense on the cost of management incentive and retention scheme you indicated. What would be the likely implication on P&L because of that? Second question is the client concentration. Can you provide some senses what is the client concentration in the business? And last is about cross-sell, upsell opportunities. Considering the buying center differences and other things, how do you expect cross-sell, upsell to play out in the acquired entity as well as Cyient core business? Thanks.
Maybe I can take the first question, Sukumar, and then I'll hand it over to you. So the management incentives is a function of many things in terms of performance, the synergy aspects of it as well. But it's not a big number. It's less than 5% of the overall deal value that we are talking about. And that gets paid only if those outcomes are achieved.
And if I understand, your other part of the question was how will what you talked about will get executed in terms of cross-selling?
Yeah, cross-sell, upsell across, let's say, our client as well as their client. How do you expect some of this synergy benefit to play out, or you expect it to be very limited considering the buying center differences? And second was client concentration.
Sure. So to talk about cross-sell and upsell first, no, a key part of what we want to achieve, especially on Cyient customers, is to achieve that cross-sell and upsell into the Cyient customer base. We do believe it's going to take time. So when we talk about the business plan as well as some of the earnout, while there is a synergy target that the acquired management company will have, it is not a significant portion of the EBITDA because it takes time to convert to EBITDA. But we do expect that conversion itself will create significant momentum for year two, year three, in terms of synergy of cross-sell and upsell into our accounts. So that is definitely a part of the plan. In terms of the aspect of the accounts or cross-sell into their accounts, that is not something that we are prioritizing right now, but definitely something that we'll look into because they do have significant enterprise accounts as well. Some of the leaders in the respective industries that they operate in. But the business model that we are presenting and the valuation we are presenting is built on cross-sell into Cyient accounts. In terms of concentration of customers, it's fairly distributed. We don't have any single customer concentration risk. They work with enterprise customers, and I would say they have built up some significant accounts which are in high single-digit million dollars. Amongst their top accounts, which makes up the constitution of the revenue for CY25.
any number for top 5, top 10 you want to say?
I don't have the number handy on top of my mind, but it's probably in the 60% range, top 10.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhishek Shindadkar from InCred Equities. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity and congrats on the acquisition. A quick question on the business model. You know, recently in one of the investors' day, we heard that in an agency model, a lot of data, you know, work rather than being dependent on scripts and SQL rules can be deployed, you know, in an automated format and autonomously. First, just wanted to understand if the, you know, this is correct. Second, if actually this is correct, how does this change, you know, this current business model and also impact the future growth? Thank you.
Sure. So the answer to your question is all of them is yes. Harjot, you want to talk in terms of explaining the journey that we have in mind?
Yeah, so, you know, it's across the board, you know, in terms of how data will be consumed and deployed. The more important part is understanding of the business workflows and the workloads which are supporting a certain function which will consume that data. That's where the value gets created, you know, in terms of how engineering, you know, functions vis-a-vis aftermarket function or a service plan function, and how do those functions consume the data, is where, you know, and how do they kind of use that data to build inferencing models to take their autonomous decisions, which the agents will be executing and even the human in the loop. That's the architecture we're looking at. Did I answer your question?
Yes, partially. But just to follow up on that, if, you know, this data cleansing or a lot of data work gets automated, you know, how do we see, you know, playing in that market, or what would be our right to win in that market?
Yeah, so data collection is a massive opportunity with a very limited runway for next 2 to 3 years. So there's, you know, I mean across the enterprise, you know, we are doubling the data we create every quarter. You know, every customer is doubling the data because of, you know, all the way to IoT, edge, you know, and the sensors built in the products and across the board. So there is a massive, you know, data that's being created. So it has to be collected. There is, you know, and we're already playing at that place, in that space. We also have Tao who's playing in the space. Tao brings in tools to quickly collect it, trap it, and build the correlation models, build the annotation models, define the hierarchy. So, so we do have, you know, the right to win in this space, and we do intend to play to win that, because that becomes a wedge play. That's also a entry into the customer's overall data lifecycle. You know, which kind of the next phase is data storage, data engineering, you know, reference architectures, and then building analytics on top of it, training the agents. Those are, you know, high value, high margin, you know, work streams, which are also sticky and long term. That's where we lock ourselves into a 3 to 5 year strategic roadmap for the customers. So data digitization, data collection, you know, wrapped up with automated tools, and understanding of the context, you know, we understand the unstructured data very well because we have been within the customer journey for the last 25 years, managing their, you know, product engineering, their plant engineering. So we understand that data very well. And as Tao brings the tools, we can define the business rules, whether it's a mining customer, whether it's an aerospace customer, whether it's an energy customer, we understand their life cycle. So as you merge the domain and the into the as rules into the tools proposition just to make an entry and win the data collection, data digitization work is much more compelling than the rest of the competition.
And so Harjot, thanks. I'll add just a couple of quick additional points. If you are trying to assess business model, yes, business model can shift. It has not happened yet, but it can shift from number of people and hours to amount of data being digitized. It's a very possible reality in the future, number one. But as Harjot mentioned, the amount of data to be digitized is exploding. Also, a lot of this was earlier not done and left as is in terms of scattered data, even in Excel sheets, in some cases in terms of plan data, is even in notebooks, as in physical notebooks. And those now have ROI because it can be done in an automated way. And you don't need hundreds and thousands of people to transcribe it manually. So one is the explosion of the volume of data. Second is a lot of things which were left alone and not touched simply because it was not worth it from an ROI perspective now becomes interesting to do, apart from the journey downstream that Harjot articulated.
Super helpful, sir. Thank you for taking my question and best wishes for the rest of the year.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraints, that was the last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Krishna Bodanapu for closing comments. Thank you and over to you, sir. I'm sorry, sir, if you're speaking right now, you're not audible.
Sorry, I was on mute. Thank you, Michelle, and thanks everybody for joining on a Monday morning. As we articulated, it's a very exciting phase of our evolution from being pure play engineering to managing or addressing the life cycle. I think the key point is even in our customers' organization, the lines between engineering and IT and technology have been blurred. So I think that's the key message I want to leave with you is it's not that linear anymore. The opportunity set is really in that convergence. And our customers are also organizing themselves for that convergence. So we see this as a great opportunity. We see Tao as a great company. Though relatively early in their life cycle, they've achieved some fantastic results, which we believe that we can leverage. So we are very, very confident of what's happening and what lies ahead with the integration of Tao Digital into Cyient. So thank you once again for listening to us. Thank you, of course, for your support. And we'll keep you posted on how things go. Thank you.
Thank you, members of the management. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Cyient Limited, that concludes this conference. We thank you for joining us and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.